Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, your immune system versus COVID-19. We'll spend this hour with science journalist Matt Richtel to learn how the new coronavirus spreads from person to person, how it behaves once it invades our cells, and why our bodies fight to clear it can make us feel so terrible. We'll talk about why some people who are infected never seem to get sick, and about why an overzealous immune response can actually be dangerous for people exposed to the coronavirus. Our conversation starts after a short break. Times, many of us have the luxury of taking our immune systems for granted. Cuts heal, colds go away, germs we pick up are defeated before they ever have a chance to make us feel bad. But these are not ordinary times. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. As of this morning, the United States has more than 188,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19. Many public places are closed, workers asked to stay home to slow down the spread, and those who do go out to work or to buy essential supplies can't help but be hyper aware that things we touch might be contaminated, people we interact with might be infected. With no vaccine yet to prevent COVID-19 and no drug proven to cure it, it's understandable to at least wish for a supercharged immune system. But as my guest will explain, we need to be careful what we wish for. Matt Richtel is a Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter and author of a book called An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. We spoke to him last year when the book first came out and really wanted to talk to him again, given current circumstances. Matt, welcome back to Think.
Thank you, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I managed to get my son, 11, sheltered in place like the rest of us to stop playing basketball outside my home office so we could speak. No well, small feat.
Yeah, I know. It's only an hour, so he can go back to dribbling in a little bit. So we can assume, Matt, that obviously viruses don't have consciousness, but I'm going to ask a question as if they did. What do they want biologically? What do they achieve by infecting large numbers of people?
Yeah. Well, what they want is the same thing that we want, so to speak, which is to pass their genes along. And very effective viruses, like very effective human beings, have wonderful survival strategies. And so this virus has some attributes that make it quite compelling as a survival in terms of its survival capacities.
So when you say it has really good survival capacities, we've heard about how long it can live on, say, surfaces or hang in the air in droplets or aerosolized particles. But what about its survival capacities in infecting people before they feel sick?
Yeah, boom. You just nailed it. Look, this has got some attributes of some pretty nasty viruses that came before. So the one that pops immediately to mind, although it is a different kind of virus at its core, is HIV. You could have that for a long time without demonstrating any symptoms and pass it along. This sits inside of you, resides inside of you as you are a host. And for 2 weeks, you may be asymptomatic. Shedding it is the official terminology. And when that happens, you're carrying it around and you're passing it to the next host. And only then does it begin to manifest as illness.
So the latest estimates that I've read are that somewhere between 18 and 25% of people who are infected with the virus that causes COVID-19 may never develop symptoms serious enough to be noticed. What do we know about those asymptomatic infections? Are people just lucky? Do they have something in common that protects them?
Yeah, I mean, this is now you're getting into, as one editor used to say about stories, the gooey center of things. And this becomes a uh, this becomes a deeper conversation about the immune system. So maybe I can pause full stop and just say something that is really quite remarkable. The coronavirus, the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, is at its core an immune system story. Full stop. I'm not sure you would get an argument from anybody, although I don't hear this widely discussed. Can I try to back that up, or would you like to throw me off the radio right now?
No, I don't want to throw you off the radio because I know, for example, I think where you're going with this is that people who come down with the most severe symptoms of COVID-19 are actually having the most extreme immune response.
Yes, absolutely. And I would act, may I back up just a
Please.
touch
Sure.
before we get there? If you're going to be that much smarter than the guest, I don't know what I'm going to
It's all an
We have to
illusion, but
come
I'm
to
glad
some,
it's.
we have to come to some agreement. Can you just play less smart than the guest? Look, the first thing I want to say here is lies in the very language of the virus itself. Have you heard it called the novel coronavirus?
Yes.
The way I'm sure people have, I asked that question not to be naive, but not everybody has. It's really important to hear the word novel because this word novel, what it says to me through the lens of the immune system is this is new to our immune system. And that is no small thing. So, first of all, why is it new? People have heard this, but this looks like it's a combination of a virus that came from animals but found a toehold in humans. It has enough genetic material to be viable inside humans. This is not something the human immune system has seen before. So I just want to pause there. That may help explain the cascade that's going to lead us exactly where you went. So far, am I making sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the next step in that cascade is what happens when our body sees something new is that the factories inside our body have to get up and running, our immune system factories. And it appears to answer your question that in some cases, people may be asymptomatic because their immune systems quite imbalance, which are quite in balance, that's a really big word we'll hopefully talk about today, are parrying this disease very effectively. And there's another piece that may help people be asymptomatic, and that has to do with their lung health and lung capacity. It may be that when your lungs are relatively healthy and the virus comes along, the immune system says, this is not that big of a deal. This won't do so much harm to me. And it addresses the virus in a very balanced, easily calibrated way. Now, how many words have I thrown out that are now people are either falling asleep or don't make sense? Is anybody awake out there?
So how does the immune system decide how robustly to respond to any given pathogen that it detects?
Yeah, great question. And I think we've done a version of this exercise before. Not exactly, but if listeners will bear with us, I'm going to have Chris describe what's around her studio right now. What do you see around you?
I've got a big plate glass window between me and the control room. I have several microphones. I have some chairs, a couple of monitors, a phone, and a computer screen.
Okay, can you actually see John, the producer? Is it Jeff?
No, actually, the producer is Paige today.
Paige. Oh, Paige. Okay, I spoke to Jeff. Can you see Paige?
Yes, I can.
Okay, all right. So here's what I want to say is that everything around Chris is covered in microbes. There's bacteria, virus, and especially producers. Producers are like editors, they're covered in microbes. But look, Chris, on your skin, on your clothes, on the guitar that's sitting here in my home office, on my computer screen covered in microbes, virus, bacteria, parasites, all kinds of alien life forms. And what our bodies do over the course of our lives is make constant calibrations over what to attack and what not to attack. The first job of the immune system is to ask questions and then shoot later. And I know we've had this conversation, but it bears repeating that I think of the immune system as part bouncer and part ballet dancer. Many people think of it as all bouncer, like I'm going to attack everything that's alien, but that would lead to scorched earth. So you've got this system that's constantly calibrating. Now, let's see. Take a big breath, Chris.
Okay, I'm sure I'm going to breathe in microbes here, but okay.
That's my aim.
Okay.
Look, your immune system just did some work. Now, don't try this at home, but like rub your cheek.
All right.
Okay, so now microbes are probably being assessed at some point, either through your, I don't want you to rub your nose or mouth because we're being told not to do that right now, but you can see the myriad ways in which microbes make it into your body. And when they do, it sets off this network inside your body, the immune system, which has many, many cells and many molecules. And much of what they are charged with doing is not attacking, but assessing and calibrating. And this is going to bring us to the COVID virus very quickly. But it's just worth understanding that when you ask, how does it calibrate COVID? How does it calibrate how big of an attack to make? The very first thing to understand is its chief job is calibration.
All right, so we know that some people are getting very, very, very sick when they are infected with the novel coronavirus, and some people aren't. So this is where I was going before. What's the difference between those people? You mentioned some people who have, prior lung disease. I think we can all understand how they would be more vulnerable. I think we know that lots of older folks have more problems fighting things off. But what about people in the middle? Why does person A, in the same basic health as person B, have a very different experience when infected?
Okay, so first let's start with the most anticlimactic thing I'll say all day, just to get it out of the way. We're not 100% sure. However, there are some fascinating clues that are emerging that you alluded to earlier. And that has to do with the fact that in a number of cases, it appears that the immune system is actually overreacting, not underreacting. And this becomes very significant when we speak of the lungs in particular. Okay, so I'm looking at my clock and I know we have a break forthcoming. How deep do you want me to go into this right now?
You've got 45 seconds.
Okay, how about this? Can I explain the lungs and the
Yes.
immune system after the break? And in the
Sure.
meantime, I could sing. The screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. I try to do just a touch of Springsteen every day. So look, after the break, I will explain why the lungs are so susceptible, but why older folks and people with pre-existing conditions may be having an excessive immune response, and why it tells the rest of us we should not be boosting our immune system, but we should be balancing our immune system. And there are very concrete, scientifically backed ways to do that.
And we will talk about those ways as well after we talk about what COVID-19 might do in the lungs. My guest this hour is Matt Rechtel. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner, reporter for the New York Times, and an author of a number of books. The most recent is An Elegant Defense: The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Boyd. My guest this hour is New York Times reporter Matt Richtel, whose most recent book is An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System. All right, Matt, as promised, you're going to tell us what COVID-19 does to human lungs.
I just pulled up this quote that a doctor in Denver told me. The doctor's anonymous, so the patient can be anonymous. Patient died a few weeks ago, 50 years old, a little bit overweight, a little hypertension, not super major. And this is the quote the doctor told me, quote, "This thing just destroyed him. It was impressive in the severity of which it overtook him. I've seen a lot of things, and it's rare I see something this aggressive, this out of control, this destructive." Guess what he was referring to?
I would guess COVID-19.
The immune response.
Huh.
And I didn't mean to make it a trick question. Sorry, that came off a little glib.
Trying not to come off as smarter than my guest. So.
Yes, no, exactly. I tried to, I'm just getting even for the other thing. It's behind us.
All right.
No, but look, it's not to say that the virus didn't trigger this, but here's the thing that's happening. And then I'll back into why the lungs are so sensitive to this in particular. So I mentioned that it takes a while for these factories to get up and running. Well, one of the hypotheses that scientists are working with right now is that when the immune response feels overwhelmed by this virus, when it feels it hasn't established a sufficient early response, it begins to react very zealously. And what that means is, if you picture your lungs that are populated by these delicate sacs that allow oxygen in and out and carbon monoxide, right? Carbon monoxide? Mm-hmm. Help me with my science. Out. These air sacs can get clogged first with virus, but then when the immune cells rush to the scene, they can start to die in there. The immune system effectively can panic, and the lungs can be flooded with immune cells themselves. If you want to think about, so in Dallas, what are you guys doing? Are you sheltering at home?
We're sheltering in place. That's right.
Sheltering in place. Look, the way you can actually see that as an immune system play.
Huh.
Everyone, or to save ventilators, when you put someone on a ventilator, what you are attempting to do is either allow the immune system to catch up when it has failed to substantiate a big enough response, or to even calm down and let the lungs heal. Collectively, as a society, we are aiding the immune system of our infirm and elderly and those whose immune systems either haven't caught up or are overreacting.
All right, let me ask you this, Matt. I've heard stories about people who either remain asymptomatic or are pre-symptomatic. And there are descriptions of, you know, if they're swabbed, virus particles sort of blooming quite profusely in their noses and in their throats. How does this virus or any virus sort of get in the first place and establish itself before the immune system has a chance to respond and build those factories, as it were?
Yeah, we have two immune systems, actually. This is one of the most remarkable things, of many remarkable things I learned while writing this book. I had no idea. One is called the innate immune system, and one is called the adaptive immune system. All right, so there Chris is, and she inhales or wipes her, you know, mouth on her sleeve or whatever, and some virus comes in. The first thing that happens is there's a response from what's called the innate immune system. And the way I've best heard this described is as if these were emergency responders, police, firefighters, your first responders, and they show up on the scene, and their job is to do kind of a generic containment, but also like some serious sniffing around. What is this? Is this a problem? Do I attack this? Do I leave it alone? Is this a threat? Can I hold this in check? So does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm.
Okay. To explain why some viruses take hold and others do not take hold, I'd like to, and before we get to, because you're asking why does one take hold and one not? I'd like to tell you about cold sores. They are one of the most instructive viruses in the world to me in terms of understanding the immune system and ultimately understanding what might be happening with COVID. So, I never like to say, have you ever had a cold sore? Because we all have, but no, it's a very personal question. So I'll say this. Chris, have you ever met anyone who's ever had a cold sore?
Yes, I have.
Once I was doing a speech at a high school about texting and driving. And I said, has anybody ever looked at Facebook while driving? And nobody raised their hands. And the principal came over and whispered to me, ask anybody if they have a friend who's done Facebook while driving. And I asked, and everybody's hands went up. So, look, here's the thing about cold sores. Fascinating virus. Herpes, one of the most common viruses in the world. Most people have an overwhelming number. The herpes virus hangs out in the ganglia at your brainstem, and it just sits there. And it's pretty powerless. It just kind of sits there until your immune system dampens, recedes, or gets low, and then it crawl. I'm sorry, this is grotesque, but bear with me. It's true. It crawls down your mouth and it inhabits the roof of your mouth as a canker sore or a sore or the sides of your lips. Basically, it only takes hold when your immune system resources are low or redirected. What that adds up to is that there are times when viruses is either sensing the power of the immune system or the immune system is in balance and intact when the viruses really aren't that effective. They're kind of hanging around, but they can't take hold. There's your innate immune system intact, hanging around, putting up a sufficient defense. That appears to be working for some no small number of people with COVID-19.
So you mentioned, this response where there is part of the immune system that sort of leaps on the problem, almost like, first responders. I'm curious about, and I don't want to drag this metaphor too far, but if there is something like viral profiling that can help us, the fact that this virus, a coronavirus, might in some ways resemble other common coronaviruses that we've all been exposed to that have caused kind of minor colds for us in the past. Is that helpful to our immune system to have dealt with something that vaguely looks like the suspect here?
Gosh, Chris, you sure would think so, wouldn't you? But this appears to be different enough that we do not appear to have inherent or a related term, herd immunity. And what happens is we get familiar with a virus that we kind of build in this low-level, constant, persistent immunity. It's shy of a vaccine, but it does prepare our bodies to deal with this particular thing. And for some reason, that I'm sure we will find out through all the wonderful science being done, this is just not near enough to those for us to be able to be mounting the kind of response that we might if we'd really seen it before, which leads us really quite aptly to the second part of the immune system. So let's say those first responders show up and they detect that something is problematic. This happens all the time with many different kinds of virus and bacteria. Hey, I see a problem here and I'm going to do the best containment I can, but I'm not a specialist. That's what the immune system says. I'm a kind of a generic first responder. I'm going to call in the assassins. And those assassins are called the adaptive immune system. And they are truly, Chris, truly one of the most marvelous creations I think I've ever heard about on Earth. And when I say I've mentioned before, I learned some remarkable things. The section of the book called Infinity Machine represents the single most startling thing I learned while writing this book. and it goes directly to COVID-19. So can I just tell you a bit about your adaptive immune system?
Please.
All right. You've heard of T cells and B cells? So for those who are like I was 3 years ago, before I got to talk to Tony Fauci all the time on the phone, I T cells and B cells, I don't know. They sounded like something from alphabet soup to me. I didn't know from nothing. But these are the cells that are your fighters and generals of your adaptive immune system, your precision immune system. And they do something when you are in utero and born that no other part of the human body does. What they do is when those cells get generated, the DNA inside them scrambles up at random. So imagine that you have hundreds of millions of these little fighters, and their DNA scrambles up at random. So they're just a little bit different than one another. That gives them an incredible, incredible power, like a power that makes you wonder about the whole construct of the universe. It's so magnificent. They are capable of recognizing alien life forms as of yet undiscovered. There is so much random DNA in these things that when a novel coronavirus comes along, when an alien species bacteria comes along, when something eventually lands from another universe, there's a chance that inside some of us, or many of us, is a T cell or B cell able to recognize this alien life form. Is your mind boggled as much as mine?
It is pretty amazing stuff.
I know, I get a little excited. A guy won a Nobel for this in the 70s for discovering this. The reason I call it the Infinity Machine is, oh my gosh, there's all this stuff in there. But now along comes the novel coronavirus. We've seen other coronaviruses, we've seen flus, we've had diseases that have given a hint to our T cells and B cells before, hey, at some point you may have to get the factories up and running to fight this thing. But now along comes the novel coronavirus. And after the innate immune system sends out a signal that says, uh-oh, danger, DEFCON, I can never remember, is DEFCON 1 or DEFCON 5 the bad one?
I think DEFCON 1, actually, it's like as it gets lower, but I might be wrong about this.
I can never remember. I always get
DEFCON
the wrong
bad. Let's just call
DEFCON.
it DEFCON bad.
It's called DEFCON, seriously bad. It says DEFCON, seriously bad. The sirens go off, neener, neener, neener. And then they send out a signal saying, is there a T cell or B cell combination that recognizes this pathogen? If we have seen it before, it helps our factories get up and running more quickly. We have some basis for it. But if it's never been seen before, it has to go find that one in a million, one in a hundred million cell that might have the right DNA. And then that thing has to go replicate itself by the masses and hunt down those viruses inside our body.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. I want to go to the phones now. Were you taking a breath there? Or...
Well, I try really hard not to get long-winded, but I get excited. So when you let me know when you want me to finish that story, but I love the phones.
No, I do want you to finish the story. Why don't you finish that and then we'll take a call because we do have a couple people who want to ask you questions.
Okay, so long story short, if those factories have trouble getting up and running, and they do in older folks, they don't run as efficiently to begin with, you could understand why the immune system would start to basically go into overdrive. It starts to make factories, but then it goes, oh my God, I'm not moving fast enough. Oh my gosh, my lungs are in peril. My lungs are so sensitive. I need them to get oxygen into my body. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And this is the last big term I'll say of the day, hopefully, for your sake. It sets off a cytokine storm. People may read this, they'll read it in the book, but they may read it elsewhere now because the word's starting to appear. This is a cytokine is the signals sent by your immune system calling for help. And when a cytokine storm happens, not only does it send the immune cells to the affected part of the body, it starts to attack the whole body. And by it, I mean your immune system, and you get massive organ failure. And that brings us to the story of the guy in Denver who was so devastated. And I just, before I scare the heck out of everybody, this is not happening to everybody. I'm just giving you a mechanism. It may well not happen to you. It's likely not to happen to you. So please don't get terrified. I just want to explain the mechanism.
All right, let's go to the phones now. We may be able to take Jessica in Rowlett, Texas's question before the break and have Matt respond after. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. I have lupus and Sjögren's. I've had it since I was 16. And the medicine that they're using to treat it is hydroxychloroquine, or the same medicine that they're using to treat the COVID virus. So I think it's interesting that they both seem to be an overreaction of the immune system that's causing this really severe infection. And also there's now a shortage of that medication for patients that need it every day, like me. I just wanted to bring all that up.
Thank you for calling. We will talk a little bit about that after the break. My guest this hour is Matt Rechtel. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner, reporter for the New York Times, and an author of a number of books. The most recent is An Elegant Defense: The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System. Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is New York Times reporter Matt Rechtel. His most recent book is An Elegant Defense: The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System. Before the break, Matt, we heard from Jessica, who says she has lupus and takes the medication that is being used experimentally as possibly a therapy for some people who have developed COVID-19. There's now a shortage of this for people who take the drug on a regular basis. How does all this relate? How does an autoimmune disorder affect the way our bodies respond to an actual pathogen?
Jessica, great question. I did not know about the shortages. I hope you were not affected by that. There's absolutely a direct connection. The drugs that dampen the immune response for people with autoimmune disorders are being as a way to dampen these extreme responses. Yesterday, Dr. Fauci said something that I suspect was lost on many people. He talked about the use of monoclonal antibodies. Monoclonal antibodies are these very specialized drugs, immunotherapy drugs, that are used to dampen or tinker with the immune system. I suspect we can begin to see that these drugs will be tested more in the coming weeks and months.
We're also hearing that plasma is being collected from people who have successfully survived a COVID-19 infection for potential experimental and therapeutic use. Can you give us a sense of what that might be about, Matt?
Yeah, I can only give you a sense, Chris, because this one is a touch beyond me. But my expectation is that the idea here is to provide some experience, if you will, to the immune system by giving it some of the word is antibodies. Antibodies are pieces of the immune system, molecules that recognize the molecules on dangerous invaders called antigens. That is my suspicion about how they think that may work. I don't know how it's bearing out.
We've had a couple people who have been curious about their pets. Folks worry that if someone coughs on a dog or cat who's been exposed, or maybe pets someone's animal and that animal comes back in the house and the family pets it. Do we know anything about touching animals and whether or not they might be involved in the transmission of this virus?
I've heard that pets are not involved in the transmission, but let me say something more generally about some things we understand that are vulnerable about the virus that are simple, that lead to simple habits you can use. My understanding is that the coating on this virus is relatively thin, which is why it is susceptible to hand washing. It is a very simple habit to use when something you when someone touches a belonging of yours, a pet of yours, just wipe that thing down. I don't know. Our pets are pretty pliant, so they will sit for a wiping off. I don't know if yours will, but I would say the same if you go play tennis with somebody. You don't need to touch your face after touching a ball that they have used. If you wash your hands and the thing you are sharing, you are likely to eliminate the virus on the surface.
Okay, this is not so much an immune system question, so if it's not in your purview, I will understand. But scientists are eager, I know, to understand whether this pandemic might have seasonal patterns of infection the way influenza does. Are those seasonal infections really about the weather outside and how it affects the virus, or do they have any effect? Do the seasons have any effect on the function of our immune systems?
Well, let me start with the virus. I only know this from being in the conversations with the New York Times, the honcho, my colleagues who look more closely at this, and being in meetings. There is some conversation about whether it's UV rays that have some impact on the virus. I know there's been talk about heat, but I think when you hear conversations about heat impacting the virus, that has to do with kind of killing it in artificial environments, not seasonal. The seasonal may involve the sunlight and the UV rays. I don't think we know yet. Dr. Fauci said the other day that he is hopeful that we may see some seasonal effects. And I don't think we know yet. We're oddly enough in between, among the many other things that make life hard right now, we are amid changing seasons. So we're in sort of a holding pattern on that front. As to the immune system and seasons, the only thing that comes to mind readily is allergies, which is a slightly different conversation that also involves the overreaction of the immune system, but I think it's a little off point.
So, to the extent that we talked about heat, that fever is a symptom of a lot of different kinds of infection, is that because a higher body temperature can help kill a virus or bacterium?
That is commonly asked, but the way I understand it, and there's a chapter on fever in the book, is that fever is really a byproduct of when the immune system is working well. And the reason I mention that is there is no reason to suffer through the discomfort of a fever to allow it to burn something out of your body. I asked the guy, Charles Dinarello, who worked in the very building with Dr. Fauci, in discovering the fever molecule, and he said, go take your Tylenol. Don't feel like crud.
All right. Speaking of Tylenol, I don't know if you've heard about rumors that are circulating
Yes.
about Tylenol versus Advil. And we should say ibuprofen is the American name for the generic version of Advil. Lots
Yes.
of information has circulated that this somehow might be dangerous. Other people are saying there's not a scientific basis for this. What have you learned, Matt?
Well, here's the first thing I've learned. I learned that I read the same thing as everybody else and then went shopping and discovered that there was tons of Advil on the shelf at Safeway, but no Tylenol left. So we are all reading the same rumors. And I would tell you that based on what I read, this was out of Paris and or France and a small amount of data, I think it's far too soon to make that assumption. But what is interesting about it is it once again seems to go to the question of inflammation. Inflammation is your body's, is the fancy word for an immune response. And so once again, you can see at the very least that a lot of talk is circulating around the immune response here. But I do not have enough information to believe that that is so. I'm not saying it's not so, but I don't think anybody would tell you that we know definitively.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Carlos on the line in Dallas, Texas. Hi, Carlos. Carlos, are you
Hello.
with us? Hi.
Hi, I'm Carlos Santos from Dallas, Texas. I have a quick question. I don't know if this was already asked, but since your guest mentioned that it's the body's immune that goes to hyperdrive to fight the coronavirus, would suppressing the immunity help?
Thanks for calling. What do you know about that, Matt?
Yeah, so we just, great question. We began to discuss it with the thought of suppressing the immune system through, say, drugs you'd use for autoimmunity. The other way that the immune system often gets suppressed is through steroids. Those do not appear to be working. But Chris, I think I would be very remiss if I didn't tell people what I think is probably the best way to protect yourself right now. Could I just briefly explain how to keep your immune system as balanced as possible?
Of course.
So I want to tell everybody that I did have the privilege of spending a year with Dr. Fauci, and much of this comes from him and people at his level. And what they will tell you is that there is no magic pill for keeping your immune system in balance. In other words, not having it underreact or overreact. But there are three or four habits that have deep science behind them that can be really helpful for you right now, and you can do them, and you don't even need to buy anything. So, with all due respect to the sponsors, here's the first one. You've got to keep your stress low. And here's why. When your stress is high, it can dampen your immune response. And when I say dampen, I don't mean in a way that keeps it from overreacting. I mean in a way that leaves it out of balance. Remember I discussed the herpes cold sore crawling down your mouth?
Mm-hmm.
That comes from an imbalanced immune system, and it oftentimes happens, as many of us know, from lack of sleep or increased stress. And the best way to describe why this happens is to have you, Chris, picture your ancestor being chased by a lion. I think we may have done this once before, mm-hmm. but will you do it once again? Will you picture your ancestor being chased by a lion?
Yes, absolutely.
Is your ancestor, is your ancestor's adrenaline going nuts?
Yes, she's terrified and cannot think of anything else except getting away from that lion.
Cannot do anything else. In that moment, a bunch of chemicals are firing off that are helping her survive. Her blood pressure is going up. Her senses are acute. It's like a superpower. But here's the thing. To make that happen, resources get shifted away from the immune system. Now, why in the heck would that be? Well, the answer is quite simple. If you're being chased by a lion, the head cold can wait.
Mm.
And so for right now, I would urge those of you who are relatively safe or safe, even though you're frustrated, if you can keep your sympathetic response down, your sympathetic response is that thing you feel when your adrenaline's going, and even when you say to yourself, I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid, oh my God, I'm not afraid, oh my God, I'm so afraid. That is your adrenaline going, and it can dampen your ability to fight this virus. And the same thing goes for sleep. When you don't sleep, your body's adrenaline rises to compensate for how tired you are, and you wind up dampening your immune response. Please, if you're listening to nothing else, keep your stress low, keep your sleep high.
Obviously, you've learned a lot. You learned a lot when you were working on this book, and presumably you've known really good habits if you spent a year talking to Tony Fauci on the phone on a regular basis. Has COVID-19
yes.
changed the things you do to protect yourself on a daily basis?
Well, somebody asked me the other day, you say in your book that we should expose ourselves to more viruses to teach our immune system. Are you now willing to backtrack on that idea? And I will say that some of what I wrote about in the book, and this comes from the likes of the luminaries we've discussed here, Nobel Prize winners and others, some of the wisdom I learned was that we can be overly hygienic on a day-to-day basis. And in this particular instance, in the face of a novel disease, I have gone back to some old habits I'd gotten away from, like using the goop on my hands and washing them more often. This has changed me, and I will concede to your listeners and to myself and to you, Chris, because we share a lot of personal secrets, that I'm gonna have to think when this is over about how to assess my environment and what steps I need to take. I think this is an unusual period, and I do think our relationship with viruses and bacteria may change, or the way we think about it may change.
The last thing I want to ask you, Matt, is you seem alert and aware, not terrified. A lot of people are having a hard time, as you tell us, to reduce our stress, not being terrified. Can you offer some context for us?
Yes, I would like to offer some context. I think that we are in a time actually of tremendous opportunity. And that opportunity is to recognize that most of us are not under terrible duress right now. A lion is not chasing most of us. Let me not be naive. People are struggling to bring money in. They are terrified for their health. At the same time, if we can redefine these issues for those of us not under acute health stress right now as being within our control, that we are safe, I think that we will have a better ability to fight this virus ultimately. We are blessed.
Matt Richtel is a Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter and author of a number of books, including the most recent, An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary Science of the Immune System. Matt, thank you for taking time to speak with us again, and please tell your son he can go back to dribbling the basketball.
Much gratitude, Chris. I hope you stay really healthy.
You too. You can like our page on Facebook. We're also on Twitter. You can subscribe to our podcast for free wherever you get your podcasts, or just go to our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.